Okay, well, I'd like to welcome everyone to our third, and I think last of the, no, not last in the whole, just last of Basar Rechalav. Believe that, in case I forget, so what we're going to do next week, next Tuesday night is the first night of Hanukkah, so we're going to have off then. We're going to have off a couple weeks. Then we're going to pick up another mini-series in Kashrus, not Melchik Sufleishus, because like I said, hopefully we'll cover that tonight, or finish the, what we have to cover tonight. And the next topic will be non-Jewish things. In other words, we'll talk about Kol Yisrael, we'll talk about Pasakum, bread baked by a non-Jew. We'll also talk, the first thing we'll do is the most, I don't want to say most important, but one that's extremely important, and that is Bishulakum, cooking by a non-Jew. And we'll cover things like Basar Shni Salmina Ayin, and we'll get into all those. So just so everyone be aware, I didn't mean to scare anybody, but this is the last for Basar Rechalav, excuse me, and then Mir Tashem will have a break for Hanukkah. And then we'll pick up with another mini topic. And we'll do that throughout until we cover everything. We'll have do a short series, a mini series, and then have a couple weeks off, and then we'll start with the next part. Okay, so last week we were discussing again certain Gzeiros Derabanan. We finished, we discussed about various Gzeiros Derabanan. The last thing, which is not Gzeiros Derabanan, but that we talked about is heat. We'll cover this a little more a little later today, in merits of tonight. But one of the things we spoke about is the concept of Zeah. Zeah means, as we mentioned last time, steam. Now steam obviously by definition means that's hot. And as I mentioned last time, heat is a bad word when we talk about kosher and treif. As I mentioned last time, the story about Avrami when he was a little kid. So, and somebody came and asked a Shaila. So Avrami, he was about 6 years old, said, was it hot? Right? Because he heard daddy asking that very often. The other thing that is the second component that you got to know right away when you ask a Shaila, we'll also cover today. But again, just to review, heat is a very serious thing when we talk about Melchik Kumfleisha, Kashrus, and Treif. If something is not hot, that limits, doesn't eliminate, but limits the seriousness or the problems greatly. So Avrami was right. One of the first things the Rav is going to ask is, was whatever the situation was that's raising the shayla, was the matter, the food, hot? Hot. So what we were discussing last week was the issue of Zeah. And that is, there is steam or vapor, hot vapor, which comes out of a food. So let's say for our discussion, it could be for non-kosher too, but let's say, let's limit it for our discussion. We're talking about something fleishik. Talking about something fleishik. And you warm it up, you cook it. And that causes there, in most cases, there to be hot steam. Now that hot steam is fleishik. So the example we gave last week, which is the idea that Rabbi Blumenkranz Zechel Tzadik Bracha was discussing with us, was that what people often do is they're making food for on Erev Shabbos, and they're cooking soup, and they lift up the lid, and a lot of this hot vapor is coming out of the soup. That vapor is obviously hot, by definition. Now, what they do is they want to spice the food, so they go over with a salt shaker and shake some salt into the soup. Nothing wrong with that, except for now you have a problem that hot vapor was going up and attacking your salt in the salt shaker. So remember, Chazal were very concerned, we'll get into a few others like this, they were concerned when you have something that looks milchik, looks parv, everyone assumes it's parv, and really it's not. Chazal were very nervous about that. The one example we gave was bread, leftover bread. So if you have leftover bread, remember we're scared that maybe if it was used in a fleishik meal, so then it maybe got some fleishik residue on it, and then Motzei Shabbos you're going to use it for malava maka for a grilled cheese, and put cheese on that bread. Everybody assumes bread is parav. That's a natural assumption. But you're going to put cheese on it. You're going to melt the cheese hot, right? And now you got a treif piece of bread because you have the fleishig residue and you have the cheese. Boom. So Chazal made a gzera derabanan about that. Okay? Now, we'll get into another thing about bread a little later, also in Bli Neder tonight. But again, it's a similar problem. There's no gzera derabanan, but here you have fleishig salt. Who ever heard of such a thing? Now, again, we talked about that before. We talked about that there's another gzera derabanan. We talked about that last week. That if you have open bins, right, those little salt bins, the crystal things, and people put salt in, and then you dip your salt into it, you dip your bread into it. So we have salt shakers. We're fancy. They're closed. But if you have a bin like that, so then you have to have separate bins for milk and fleishig, because we're scared that maybe while you're eating the bread at a fleishig meal and you dipped the fleishig bread, because it has fleishig residue on it, you dipped it into the salt. So now the salt is fleishig. So Chazal were worried about that. So therefore, again, Chazal don't talk about this, but obviously an extension of that would be a concern that if you have vapor coming up, now again, in our example that we're giving, we're talking about fleishig. We're talking about that there's soup vapor coming up. But it could be something milk just the same. And you shake salt and the salt is being attacked by the hot vapor. So now you have fleishig salt, or it could be milk salt. So again, as we mentioned last week, that's what we left off on, is that you shouldn't do that. You should be careful either to have milchik and fleishik salt, or any condiments you have. Or the idea Rabbi Blumenkranz said is very simple. That is, you don't have to have milchik and fleishik salt, but all you do is, before you open up the pot and all that vapor is coming up, is put some salt in your hand, in your palm, and then go over and then open it up, and then dump it in, or whatever it may be, then you don't infect your salt shaker. Now again, as I mentioned all the way at the end last week, you have to be, this is, again, the name of this year is kosher, kashrus concepts. So you have to learn the concept. The concept is, you have to be careful with things like this that we assume are parav, and everyone will assume are parav, but you might easily milchik or fleishigize it. So for example, an example I gave is, you have, it could be ketchup. Right, and your kids are putting some ketchup on, especially if you have little kids, on a hamburger or something like that. And so they just have, I don't know, there could be steam. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But a lot of times they get that nozzle very close to the hamburger. And maybe sometimes it's more than close. It comes into actual physical. Now, so there's fleishig residue on your nozzle of your Heinz ketchup or whatever, Geffen, whatever brand you want me to plug tonight. So again, so there's less of a problem because it might be not hot, but there's still fleishig residue on there. Now it could be you're going to use your the ketchup for something milchik or parav. So you have to be careful about that. Right? Don't drive the kids crazy, but you have to be careful about these type of things of potentially making milchik or fleishig condiments. So it's a problem. Yes, Dr. Cohen.
You deflationify your hand that held the salt that was exposed to the
vapor. It's not so much of a problem. As long as it's, once it gets dry, you know, it's not so much of a problem. Come on, wash off your hand. It's not as much of a problem. Now, that's what we covered at the end last week. Now, let's take this a little further, okay? This is just really to introduce the concept. So now, if we have fleishig, let's just use that example of fleishig. You have fleishig vapor. So now what happens if I have inside my oven something cooking, and it's cooking, and it's getting hot, right? That bad word, hot. Now there's vapor coming out of it. Where does that go? Well, eventually there's an exhaust, which we'll get to. I'd like to thank Mr. Mesh for reminding me of that. There's an exhaust, and it'll go somewhere. But in the meantime, it's inside. Now, we're not talking about the burners on the top of this. We're not talking about the stovetop. We're not talking about the burners. We're talking about the actual oven. So now, where does that hot vapor go? Well, eventually it goes out to an exhaust somehow. But in the meantime, it's in the oven. So then what? Does it all get sucked out by the exhaust? Maybe some does, but it goes somewhere sometime. So our concern is maybe it's in the walls of the oven. Who cares? We care. Because there's such a thing as something that's balua. Balua. Balua means absorbed. So what does that mean? Well, simple. Let's go away from an oven for a second. Let's say you have a fleishig bowl, right? You have a fleishig bowl, and you put hot soup into the bowl. Then you finish the soup, and you wash out the bowl. Could you put something milchic into that bowl afterwards? No. Why not? Why can't you? There's nothing here anymore. There's nothing here anymore. Answer is, there has a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that chazal, that is passed down from Hashem to Moshe in Sinai, that there's something absorbed inside. There's absorption inside. So what will happen? So what will happen is, so I had chicken soup, so now there's little chickens running around inside. This is the imagery that I use in Beis Yaakov, and girls come up to me years later, but I use it with pigs. You know, when we're talking about treif. So there's little pigs running around inside. The last year I was teaching in Beis Yaakov, a girl, very artistic, made for me out of paper, a fork. Again, she cut out like a fork, and she made little pig faces all over the fork. But that's what exactly where it is. There's taste absorbed inside, and now what's going to happen? Now when I put, let's say it was fleishig taste from chicken soup absorbed inside, so I don't see anything. What you see is called be'en. Everybody can see that? Be'en, like the word ayin. Ayin means to see, the eye. It's what you see. So, but we all know in Torah, there's more than what we could see, right? There's the physical, and there's the neshama, which you can't see. So the same thing, in a perverse way, is true here. So you have what you see, but I washed off the fleishig, I washed off the chicken soup. So now I can put milk into it, right? I can put hot chocolate into it, right? No, you can't. Why? Because there's something absorbed inside. Inside the walls of that vessel is chicken flavor. So what? Who cares? No, we care, because when you put the hot chocolate in next, the heat, right? The heat of the hot chocolate is going to pull out what's absorbed inside. So let's go slow motion now. So when I put the hot chocolate into a fleishig bowl, or what was a fleishig bowl, so now this hot chocolate, that's going to pull out the absorbed taste. And what are you going to have? You're going to have a chicken-flavored tasting hot chocolate. If you don't believe this, ask Mrs. Krombach. Because years ago, there was somebody who was becoming frum, and they had I don't want to get into the specifics of the case because that's for a later topic. But they had something they had to kosher, and it had to be kosher very hot. So we volunteered Mrs. Krombach's kiln. And the person, and I explained this idea of absorption to them. The person was just becoming frum. They told me later they did not believe it. But they told me when they did put it into Mrs. Krombach's kiln, they smelled the smell of the last thing, of the thing that they ate.
I do that when I put dishes in all the time. If you use a coffee cup and it looks perfectly clean and I stick it in the kiln, you can smell, and I can open the kiln at about 700 or 800 degrees and there's like oozing gross coffee coming out. I'll try to find a cup and bring it in.
That'd be cool.
Fiery at that point, so you can see it.
I when I was teaching in Beis Yaakov, I used to tell that story. I told that story. So this stuff absorbed inside. So when you have, let's say, why can't I just have one vessel of whatever it is and wash it and there's nothing there? Answer is no, there is something there. And here we have an eyewitness testimony or a nose testimony, I don't know, whatever you call it. So again, now you'll have milk and fleishig together. That's what you'll have. So now let's go back to the oven. So now I cooked whatever inside the oven. There was fleishig vapor. Where did that vapor go? You know, maybe eventually went out through the exhaust, but it probably got absorbed in the walls of the oven. Who cares? I care, because the next time I cook something, maybe I'm going to put pizza in there. Well, that might not be a good example, but we'll get that. Actually, it is a good thing. Put pizza in there. So what happens now? So now I warm up the pizza. Pizza gets hot. So there's milk vapor coming out of it, right? So what's that going to do? Well, there's going to be two issues. The oven getting hot and the milk vapor. So first of all, the milk vapor is going to go up and join the fleishig vapor in the walls of your oven, right? So that is carne leche together. That's a milk of pleasure, excuse me. Together. So that could be a problem. Well, I'm saying could. We'll see in a second. And also it could trape up your pizza. Okay, so now, so the question is, so what do you do with an oven? So most opinions say you should designate your oven to be whatever it is, milchik or fleishik. Milchik or fleishik, because of this zeya problem. Because of the Zeya issue. There's some who disagree, who say that, no, an oven never becomes milk of fleishik, whatever it is, because it gets too hot. So there's never a problem with milk. But most poskim don't agree with that. Most poskim don't agree with that. So what I usually tell people to do is designate it should be milk or fleishik, whichever you use more often, wherever is more convenient for you. Again, because of the Zeya problem. Now, let's say you want to cook something else. Let's say you want to, it's a fleishig oven, and you want to make challah. We'll get back to milchuk and fleishig challah a little later, but hold off on that. So what do you do? Well, you have to kasher it. How do you kasher an oven? That's also a big problem. The best thing is the Olam Haba is having a stainless steel sink and a self-cleaning oven. That's I have my picture. Some people's picture of Olam Haba. But that's the best way to if you have a self-cleaning oven. If you don't, it gets a little more complicated. Some people say you have to blowtorch the oven, which is a little tricky. How you do that, it's not so simple. Ruf Scheinberg told me that what you would do is leave it for 24 hours, which we'll get to. I'll explain you that concept too. Leave it for 24 hours and then clean it out with like Easy Off or something and then turn it up all the way. Another posuk said, and put in a pot of hot water, so to steam it out. See, now you get the concept, right? If you steam it out according to these poskim, so then it would kosher it. So some people say you could do that. So again, but definitely the best thing to do is to designate the oven for one thing or the other, milchuk or fleishik. Because if not, you get into the zeya issue. Now, a couple other things I want to mention about zeya. First of all, as Mr. Mesh was mentioning to me, Rabbi Blumenkranz Halberstam was over our house a few years ago, and he pointed out to me that we talked about or touched upon that where does the Zeya go? Where does the steam go? Well, every oven has an exhaust, but most people don't know where the exhaust is. And Rabbi Blumenkranz pointed out that our oven at home has, it's not a problematic exhaust, but it could be a problematic exhaust. People are not aware of it. And that is, the oven is like this. Let's say this is the top of the oven where the burners are. And so let's say this is the panel. You know, you push all the buttons and everything. So it happens to be our oven is the exact one he was worried about. So right over here, right where it comes to an angle, right over here, you don't even notice it. There's like these little grates. You don't even notice. I didn't pay any attention to it. But he pointed out to us that that's where the hot... That's where the exhaust comes out from. That's where it comes out from. That's very significant. Because let's say you're cooking something fleishig inside the oven and you have a parav or milchik pot on the burners. Right? So everybody following what I'm saying here? So what's going to happen is, without you even realizing it or even seeing it, there's hot fleishig steam coming from the inside of the oven, coming up through the exhaust and bashing right into your milchik or parav pot. Now, I assume most times people don't do that, right? I don't know. Usually people are cooking fleishik inside. I don't know. They're doing something, whatever they're doing on the top. But it could happen. So he pointed out you have to realize where the exhaust is. You have to look where the exhaust is. You have to know because that's hot steam coming out and it could be a problem. Now, one other very important issue about steam is what foods give off steam? In other words, we were just talking about soup. Obviously, soup gives off steam. But what gives off steam and what doesn't? Now, there's a very big difference. Some folks can hold almost anything gives off steam. Right? Rabbi First in Chicago told me that he holds that if that steam, Zeya, is only given off by something that's a liquid or was in a liquid state at one time. It could be cake. It could be a cake batter, soup, obviously. But he told me that if something is dry, like a piece of chicken or a hot dog, he says that doesn't, he holds that doesn't give off Zeya. Now, not many poskim agree with that. I just want to tell you. But Rabbi First told me that Befer, she's an Adam Gadol. And again, I was arguing with him. Again, I'm not a big cook, but it seems to me that chicken gives off steam. But so again, there's a question altogether, what gives off steam? Certain foods don't give off steam. They just don't. So then those would not be problematic foods.
Is it that it does not give off any steam, or it doesn't give off enough
steam? Enough steam to be, right. But again, like by chicken, again, I'm not a big cook here. But when my wife makes chicken on an Erev Shabbos, it seems to me that, but again, who am I to argue with him? Okay. So good. We spoke about how to kosher an oven and so on and so forth. Again, if there's a particular shayla, like I said, you can ask me privately. Now, again, so that's how you kosher an oven. I'm not talking about the burners. If you have gas burners, that's a totally different ballgame. Because if you have gas burners, those are an open flame. So let's say, do you have to have those grates where the burners are? Let's say most people have four burners, right? Two and two. Do you have to have some designated milchuk, some designated fleishik? So almost everyone says no. And the reason is because once you have an open flame, that flame will incinerate anything that's there, like koshers the grates because of the open flame. So I wanted to make it clear, the main issue is really the oven, not so much the burners. Now, the area between the burners, you know, that of the stovetop where it's just metal, that could be a problem. But that we'll have to hold off for when we talk about kosher and kalim. Maybe we'll do that next. I'll see. We'll have to decide. I might do that actually next. Okay. Now, another. Now, is that pretty much fuzzy? Yeah.
Can I ask, like, who poskins that could hold to have this one oven for fleishiks and milchiks?
I don't know who, but a lot of people claim that, but it gets too hot. I don't remember who names wise, but most like I don't tell people to go that way.
Right.
I'm just saying there are some people, I don't remember names. So if you see people doing that, they're not totally off the wall. Okay.
Well, if one doesn't hold to do that, and you find out that somebody cooked
something that way, you won't answer it. You won't answer it.
Okay.
Won't answer it. Okay. So I mentioned before that heat is a bad word, right? The Avrami point, right? If there's a shayla, again, what I mentioned on the first year, I'm not teaching you how to pass gan shayla. I'm teaching concepts. So again, when I mentioned before, your Rav struggles with trying to get the information you need, not what she was wearing and or he was wearing, you know, all that, what day of the week it was, you know, this is interesting, but it's not relevant to the shayla, unless it's Erev Shabbos and there, you know, it's right before Shabbos, so that could be a problem. But again, there's certain things that are very important information when you're asking a shayla. One is heat. The Rav is going to ask you, how hot? What kind of heat were we talking about? Let's say with a cleaning lady messing up the carne and the leche, she washed milchiks and fleishiks together, or she washed the milchiks with the fleishiks or whatever. So one of the first things the Rav is going to ask is, was there heat? So in other words, was the water that she was using, was it hot? Just on the side, this is not for public concern. A lot of times people call and say, you know, she messed up something with washing. So you ask, was it hot? I don't know. So I forgot who taught me many years ago that maybe it was Rabbi Frist taught me, I'm not sure, that taught me you ask the housewife or you ask whoever it is, was the senorita, was the ozera, was the cleaning lady, was she wearing gloves? Because if she wasn't wearing gloves, how hot could it have been, right? It couldn't have been very hot because your hand, now it could have been pretty hot, so it doesn't obviate the question totally, but obviously it couldn't have been very hot. Couldn't have been very hot. Your kitchen would get a C rating for that. But, you know, like, we're not talking about what the LA County Health Department would grade. We're just talking about. So, again, we don't rely upon that lechachila, but, again, that would be some type of indication. Okay, so heat. How hot was something is a very big question. There's one other thing that a Rav will have to know. Remember we were talking about absorption? Something that's nivla, what's an absorbent site? Those pigs that are running around inside of your vessel, hopefully it's not pigs, cows that are running around, or cheese that's running around inside your pot, that what is nivla, what's balua, which absorbs inside, again, part of the halakha Moshe Mitzrayim is that stays fresh or alive for 24 hours. After 24 hours, that taste becomes nifgam, it becomes soured, it becomes rotten, it becomes not good anymore. Who cares? So again, go back to the concept, go back to the idea. What's the idea? The idea is if I have a fleshed mug, let's say, and I put a hot chocolate in it, so now the heat of the hot chocolate is going to drop, is going to bring out the taste that's absorbed inside the walls of the cup. What's the taste absorbed inside the cup? Chicken. So now I have chicken flavored tasting hot chocolate. That's bad. But that chicken flavor is only alive, only stays fresh for 24 hours. Now I want to make this clear. If you have an actual piece of milchuk fleshik treif, if you have an actual piece of pig on a plate, that stays, that taste survives for a long time. Here we're talking about a lower level. We're only talking about something absorbed. Absorption, that taste that could potentially come out of the pot, the walls of the pot, is only an issue, well, we'll see, for 24 hours. After 24 hours, it's less of a problem. After 24 hours, really, it's not a problem. So really, when you think about it, if I use this cup for fleishik and I clean it, and wait 24 hours, then I can use it for milchik. That's only midoraisa. Midrabanan, Chazal said you can't do that. So even after 24 hours, it's a problem midrabanan. But midoraisa, after 24 hours, the pigs and running around inside, the treif, milchik, fleishik, whatever it is only a problem for 24 hours. That's the other very important thing that the Rav is going to want to know. If something was used within 24 hours, we call it a ben yomo. It's a ben yomo. It's a son of a day. In other words, it's within 24 hours. If it's not, if it was not used for 24 hours, it's called an eino ben yomo. Not too complicated. Now, this is very important because, again, if the absorption was dead, if it was an eino ben yomo, if it wasn't used within 24 hours, the shaila is diminished. Those are the two things that a Rav is going to ask you right away, pretty much. He's going to want to determine, was there heat? There's no heat. I could take a deep breath. Then the other question is, if it's an eino ben yomo, if the taste, the flavor that's inside, that's absorbed inside the walls of the pot, whatever it may be, whatever the utensil was that fresh? That's the two things that the Rav is going to ask. Because that taste could infect your food, could infect other pots, could do all sorts of things. When we talk about koshering, which maybe I'll do, koshering pots, which maybe I'll do later, the next, I'll take that under advisement. So that's the issue. Now you can understand what this is all about. OUD, or again, we're just using OU, but it could be any D, right? Now, what's OUD? OUD is saying Well, it's really O-U-D-E, but we don't have the E anymore. Now, of course, that's the problem. O-U-D means that's actually milchic. Whatever the product is actually milchic. Ice cream. don't laugh about ice cream. Just today, I called Rabbi Eilis. I was thinking of calling his cell phone, which I have, but you can't get. Because I know he loves these things. So I left a message that Debbie bought Chol Yisrael ice cream, and it had a sticker on it. It said pottery. But then I took out the ice cream today, and I saw the sticker, and there was no pottery on it. So I thought it was really going crazy. What I didn't realize is she bought two things of ice cream. The second one had the sticker on it. It's a from Chol Yisrael brand. And the sticker on it said it was a special run under, like, it has the three hashkakas. It says kosher parv. And it's not parv. It's milchik. It's ice cream. So that's why I called Rabbi Eilis. So maybe you'll see soon. There'll be, maybe, so that can, that a kosher, it's a wrong sticker. I mean, I could easily picture some, you know, which is a problem, which, again, we'll talk about. That about part of things, but today everything could be part of, right? We have chicken flavored things, chicken cutlets that are milchik. We have part of things that are, we have chicken flavored potato chips, which are milchik. We have, you know, like, you don't know what's kosher. We don't know what's what anymore, right? Chicken's milchik, cow's milk's fleishik or part of, you know, we don't know, which we'll get to a little later, but. O-U-D means there's actually milchik in it. But the bigger issue is, a lot of times now today, we look at the ingredients, and I don't see any milchik in it. So what's the issue? The issue is that it's dairy equipment. It used to be D-E, but they ran out of room. So now they just write O-U-D. So something could be really milchik, or it could be it's just dairy equipment. What does that mean? What that means is that the pipes, which is basically a utensil, right, it's a kli. What they did is in those pipes, they maybe make in a factory, they make many products, not just this one product, which is very likely. And so what they did is either they made a different product, or they made a kosher one and they had to do a special run. So they flushed out the all the pipes. How they do that is not for discussion now. They flushed out the pipes, they cleaned them out. But within 24 hours of producing something that was milchik, they produced something that's parv. In other words, like a Ritz cracker. You look at Ritz crackers, it's O-U-D. You read the ingredients, there ain't no milchik there. Now, people from OU will say, well, maybe there is some milchik in it, but it doesn't have to be listed because it's a small quantity, which could be. But what also obviously could be is, no, it's perfectly parv. But it was produced on dairy equipment. It was produced on dairy equipment within 24 hours. Okay? I get calls about this all the time. If you have a fleishik pot or a milchik pot, and it was clean, and it was not used within 24 hours, you have a fleishik pot that hasn't been used since Shabbos. Today you took it out and made pasta in it. So what's the story with the pasta? Answer is that pasta is perfectly parv. There's no question about it. There's not no shayel about it. The Ramah says very clearly it's perfectly parv. There's no question about it. Where the O-U-D-E is involved is if you had a pot and Sunday morning you used it. See, this is also a tip off to a rug. Saturday night or Sunday you get a shayla, so you got to worry that the pot was used within 24 hours. You don't have to assume everything was used on Shabbos. So now if you took a pot that was used within 24 hours for fleishik, and it was clean, and you cooked something parv in it, so Ashkenazim hold that you can't use that food, even though it's parv, you have to use it only with fleishik utensils, and you can't have milchiks with it. You can have milchiks right after, but you can't have milchiks with it. It's still parv, but it should not be consumed together with milchik. Okay? Why? Because the absorption, it's not real fleishik, but there's absorption there that we're worried about that is alive within 24 hours. Now, in industries, they do that a lot because they don't have time to wait 24 hours. They can't sit there for 24 hours and let it wait. They don't have that time. So that's what the DE is about. Okay?
So that pasta that's several days after Shabbos is not even considered fleshic equipment?
No. Not fleshic equipment. Where we, again, why we see a lot of D or DEs, what should be DEs, is because, like I just said, in factories, they don't have 24 hours to sit and do nothing. They can't afford that downtime. They have to constantly, right, use the equipment. What they do a lot is, even if my company doesn't need it, Mr. Bencher wants to rent out my factory and do a run of something, right? So that's good for me. My factory isn't just sitting there doing nothing. I'm making money. He's producing something. I'm making money. So they don't want a factory sitting there doing nothing for 24 hours. So they can't afford an Eino Ben Yomo.
But if we have an Eino Ben Yomo,
right,
that was on quote-unquote flesh equipment, it's perfectly para.
Perfectly.
You can put cheese on top and it's not a problem?
On top of that pasta, yeah. There's no shiloh about it. Okay, now a couple, right. So now you understand what Eino Ben Yomo is, and Ben Yomo, Eino Ben Yomo. So again, that's what Ross got to usually hone in on. Heat, 24 hours. Was something used within 24 hours? Now again, the food might still be treif or whatever, but again, it diminishes the shiloh. Again, midrabanan is a problem, but makes a very big difference.
Well, how does that work with regard to an oven? Because it's not just seya, but also like possible food splattering business.
Right.
So then.
That's why Rosh Hashanah said use the easy off, because then you kill that.
But I mean, if you're.
And like I said before, you should wait 24 hours on the oven if you're going to kosher it.
But if you're cooking something hard in your fleshic oven.
So if you waited 24 hours, if we're, that's right, we're worried that if there could possibly be be'en, actually live, whatever your case was, fleishik, so that you're right, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
But
yeah,
if your oven is clean, if you look at it and it looks clean, you haven't used it for
24 hours, that diminishes the chilos.
But at that point, if you're making cookies in your oven, the
cookies will be parv. Right. Those cookies will be parv. That's right. So if your oven is clean, even if you designate it for fleishik, if you haven't used it for 24 hours and it's clean, you can make some challah. You can make challah in there, and it's perfectly parv. Now, while we're back on challah, I want to get into another issur d'rabbanan, going back to issur d'rabbanan. There's an issur d'rabban to make milchik challah. You can't make milchik challah. I'm not going to get into this whole interesting story because we don't have time about it. That Rav Heinemann told me about a baker in Baltimore who was making milchik challah and not telling anybody. But why? So the reason is because like we said before, because people assume challah is part of. So one of your kids or somebody, or even you, you'll look at the challah and assume it's parv, and then you'll put pastrami on it. Unbeknownst to you, or maybe you forgot, there was a milk additive in the bread, and it's really milchit, and you're putting pastrami on it, having a pastrami sandwich. So that's milchit and fleishik together. So therefore, Chazal stepped in and said, no. You can't do that. You can't have milchik bread unless there's two buts. There's two exceptions to that rule, and that is if you make a small amount that is small enough to be consumed in one meal. So then, since it'll be consumed in one meal, we're not scared there'll be leftovers, and whoever's eating it will know, and there's no problem. There's less of a problem. The other exception is if it's in a different form. It's in a different form. It doesn't look like bread. So in other words, usually, it's like we mentioned before, it's a heker. There's something to tell you that, you know, this is different. So like a simple pshat that means is if you make it in the shape of a milk bottle. So then someone will look at that and say, that looks like a milk bottle. So, it must be. It's milk of bread. So even if you make a lot of it, so then it's okay. Now, but it's not necessarily a milk bottle. It just has to be a different form. So now where this became, or is, a big issue is what's considered a different form. So where this comes up is, you might know, Thomas's English muffins has a hashgach on it, but it's melchik. It's real melchik. So the hashgach of paskin, that's a different form. A muffin is not a bread. Even though you make amotzi on it, that's a different form. Now, you have to understand, once you say, I'm not, and again, it's not for me, it's not my place to disagree with that hashgacha. They're bigger people than I am. But see, then there's another hashgacha which says that it's only bread. So let's say you have like a pita or something that's a flatbread. So there's a local hashgacha that says that's a different form also. And there's a bakery under hashgacha which sells things like that, and they're milchik. So that's what that rub with the Talmud Chacham says. There's some other Rabbanim who stridently disagree with that because, you know, but you could see where the issue swivels. In other words, is it just like a bread, that type of thing that looks like a bread that's usher? But anything outside that realm is considered a different shape or form, and therefore it could be melchik? Or do you say, no, that looks like, what's the difference, manishtana pito or bread? Again, but you have to be aware of that because that's creeping into the food chain. So you have to be a little careful about that. Yes,
there's so many different shapes and forms of bread.
Yeah, but again, you're right. That's that's opening up the problem. Where do you believe, Rabbi so and so? The Chazal said it has to be a certain shape. What's the shape? Okay, so a rye bread looks different than a challah bread. So you know. So everybody agrees that would be a problem. But, you know, where do you put the line? That's the problem. So, again, this gives you an appreciation for what a hashgacha is. You give a hashgacha on a bakery, it just doesn't mean, you know, the ingredients. A rav is going to have to paskin on something like this. That's another issue that why I'm trying to... Okay. I'm sorry.
What constitutes bread?
That's the issue. That's exactly the issue. So I could give you some names and you'll get different answers. Where it all started, I'm not blaming the people who gave the Hashgacha to Thomas's English muffins. That's what started the ball rolling. And now where the ball's going to stop rolling, I don't know. Okay, so now we're going to segue into, once we're talking about, so bread, we assume is pariv. So let's get back to...
Like that.
Shouldn't be made
that
commercially.
Be
huh? I don't think so. It has to be a no. I mean, I don't know. I shouldn't say that because now I'm all confused. Like, when I was learning for smicha, it seemed pretty clear cut. But now, like I said, everything's shifting around. So I don't.
So there are. I just saw yesterday bagels with cheddar cheese.
I'm saying
on top of it, bagel.
That's probably what they're
so
doing.
So it's obvious it was cheese. There's no question.
Well, let's hold on. That's going to be the next thing I was going to get to in a way. And that is part of things. Like I said before, what we're really faced with now is something. It's really true. There was I bought from my mother a few years ago. I don't know if they. There was Morningstar chicken cutlets, which were not chicken.
Mm-hmm.
They were not chicken. They were soy, one of those things I don't like to eat, and but they were, so you assume they're parev. They were milchik. So that's like one of the examples I give is you have something that looks like schnitzel. Again, I don't know what it tastes like, but it was milchik. Or again, a few years ago I had it here somewhere in my somewhere that Rabbi Eilert sent out a kosher alert about, like I said before. Potato, chicken flavored potato chips. Which again, I don't know if you want to eat that anyways. But they were milchik. So again, everything is topsy-turvy today. Now, really, Chazal anticipated that. And that is, there were even in the time of Chazal, there was part of milk. It's made out of almonds or made out of nuts. It's called Chol Shgedim. So if you use part of milk on something, with something, with fleishiks, so there's a blatant issue of Marasayan. Right? Marasayan, you could go from here to there with Marasayan. But this is a clear case of Marasayan. It's brought down in Halakhas of Marasayan. So therefore, what did you have to do? You had to put nuts, whatever you know, like almonds or whatever it is, coconuts around, so that people, when they sat down and they saw that the chicken has this butter sauce on it, oh, coconuts, it must be coconut milk, it's okay. To obviate the Marasayan. Now, this was still yet when I was in yeshiva. I think it was before I was even married. I was at a friend's chasna. Yeah, he got married before me. So, and I said it was a nice meal. And we sit down at the chasna, and it's chicken with this butter sauce on the top. And I think I was learning from Smith, and I was like, what's going on here? So I would hope that there's a sign or something. There's no signs. We have this like all over. You go to anything, and for dessert they bring out mocha mix. They bring out ice cream, which is not ice cream. Now, leaving aside the case I just talked about, you know, today's case, the Parv special run. Unless that's really Parv, I really want to find out if that ice cream. I tasted it this afternoon when I was the ice cream that says Parv. And if that's Parv, that company's going to make millions of dollars. But again, so now, you know, at anything, they bring out Parv ice cream. They bring out, and there's no sign, there's no, my wife, when, if any of you have been over our house, so you might know Shabbos at lunch, when she brings out ice cream, she brings out the containers. So she couches that in, we have many different flavors. What do you want? Mango, you want vanilla, you want, you know, one of the Kinehara 5 gazillion power flavors we have. But really, she told me the reason why she brings it out is so that everybody sees that it's Parv. And that's the correct thing to do. Now, why that doesn't happen today? The only thing I could think of, I've never discussed this with any Rav or Posek, is because I assume Parv is so prevalent that maybe it's not Marasayan anymore. You know, if you're at a fancy restaurant and they're bringing out ice cream afterwards, or a chasna and they're bringing ice cream afterwards, you have to assume it's you'd have to be stupid not to. I assume that's what the Rabbanim are paskening, that it's so prevalent that's not even a Marasayan anymore. I guess that's what they're holding. But again, you have to be aware of the fact that there is such an issue that if you bring out something that is suspicious, it might be perfectly kosher. Maybe you made it. I don't know what it is. Like a chicken cutlet that's not chicken. So, again, there is in halakha a massive Marasayan problem. How we take care of that, I don't understand why we don't, but people don't seem so concerned anymore about it.
Who needs to be present for there to need to be this sign displaying?
The eater.
I mean, if they eat by themselves, they have to put this out?
No, not if you're eating by yourself, but like if you're serving it to someone.
Anyone, even a family member?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah. So that's what we do. Or if she announces, you know, who wants a power of ice cream? Okay. I just wanted to touch on two other things, maybe. It's getting a little late anyways. And that is, and I was on the phone with a postdoc about this today, that is the issue of a davar, sorry about that, harif. Mm-hmm. Davar harif, that's a dalad, even though it doesn't look like one. A davar harif means something that's hot. Not hot. Pungent. Something that's pungent. What does that mean? So the halacha is like this. Let's say you have a jalapeno pepper. You know, that's not mentioned in the only thing mentioned in it really is a chaltis, and I don't know really what that is. But let's say you have something that has a very strong spicy taste. So remember what we were talking about before? I have, let's say, a fleishig knife. I have a fleishig knife, which I don't have anything to. I have a fleishig knife. Now, don't forget, this knife, it looks like a clean knife, right? But we all know we're Torah Jews, so we know there's something beneath the surface. There is little cows running around inside, right? Now, it's even after 24 hours, so the cows are like just sitting there with their paws up and hooves up, and they're not doing so good, right? So even after 24 hours, but what happens? So the halacha says that when you take the knife and you cut the onion, so the pressure of the knife, it's what we call dukkha de sakino, the press of the knife, coupled with the sharpness, the sharp flake, not of the knife, but the pungent taste of the onion, that those two things coming together wake up the cows, resurrect the cow taste that's inside, even if it's more than 24 hours old. What does that mean? So what does that do? So now, that taste, even if it was an Ein Banyomo, even if it was more than 24 hours, but we hold that now the taste that's inside of the knife, let's say it was fleishik just for argument's sake, now was woken up, and now I took that knife and I cut the onion. So now what do you got? A fleishik onion. Now obviously it could be true if you cut with a milk onion, right? If I'm just using that example, right? So now you have a fleishik onion. So what? So an onion looks parve to me, but you can't take that onion and put it with something milk cook. I don't cook, so I can't say. Put on a pizza, right? You can't do that. You can't do that. So you have to be aware. Now, what is a davar charif? Is a big problem. In fact, even the Ramah discusses how about lemons. Now, you realize lemons are not really pungent. They're tart. So again, that's a big discussion exactly. But obviously, something like onions, we accept that are pungent as a davar charif. Garlic, scallions, jalapeno pepper, I assume. You know, stuff like that. So you have to be aware. Now, what a lot of people don't know is I know, actually, he's a very close friend of mine, up-and-coming posek, in fact, he's known already, pretty well known, he happens to be a very close friend of mine, Rabbi Welcher in New York. So he told me that he advises people that if you took a knife and you cut an onion, so now that onion is milk or fleishik, whatever the knife was, right? Again, even if this knife was clean and more than 24 hours old, still that onion is fleishik, and then you can't use it with certain things. But what Rabbi Welcher pointed out to me is, good, but then you take that onion, maybe you didn't use the whole onion, and you put it in the refrigerator. Now again, there's an issue about, according to some, leaving onions overnight. Let's leave that aside. But Rabbi Welcher told me that he tells people to throw out that onion. Why? Because if you put it somewhere, it's a ticking time bomb. Because you or somebody else is going to come on along and not know that's a fleishik onion. How are they not going to know it's a fleishik onion? They have no clue. And then they'll put it on the pizza. Perfectly innocent. So, Rabbi, again, this is not brought out in Shulchan Aruch anywhere. This is what we call seichel. Which, you know. So he told me that he tells people, throw out the onion. He holds it's not a baltashkas or anything. It's just a dangerous situation. So you have to be aware of that. Now, before I take a question. Now, somebody asked me, do you have to wait 6 hours after you eat that onion? So believe it or not, it's not so simple. Most poskim say no. Rabbi Akiva Eger says no. Others say no. Believe it or not, Baruch Hashem, another friend of mine who's an up-and-coming, in fact, his picture's already in the paper, Rabbi Friedman in Chicago, we were talking today, and while I was on the phone, I said, you know, by the way, because it's a big machlokas in the Darkei Tshuva. The Darkei Tshuva brings a big machlokas, whether after you ate that onion, do you have to wait 6 hours? So again, the preponderance of opinions in Darkei Tshuva are no. But there are some opinions that Dr. Chua brings down and says, yeah, you have to wait 6 hours. So I told Rabbi Friedman today on the phone, I said, it seems to me that that we don't hold that you have to wait 6 hours. So he told me, I don't know if I want to mention his name, a very big posek who holds you do have to wait 6 hours. If you ate a davar charif onion, right? So if it was fleishik, you'd have to wait. Now, I just have to tell you, you know, that's not so simple, but somebody came up to me and said, oh, it's obvious that it's you don't have to wait 6 hours. It's not so obvious. It's not so simple. So again, that's a double charef you got to watch out for. You got to be aware of that. Just a couple last things. In a refrigerator, you don't have to worry about milchiks and fleishiks together. Like in an oven, we're worried about milchiks, but you could store milchiks and fleishiks together. We're not worried that chas v'shalom there'll be an earthquake and then everything will splash together and then, you know, all sorts of things would happen. I mean, chas v'shalom, that shouldn't happen. But again, we're not worried about that. So you don't have to have two refrigerators, one for milk, one for fleishik. Again, you're aware now of fleishik, a refrigerator is less of a problem because it's cold. But you should be careful that if, let's say, Friday night you just had the soup and it's a hot pot, right? So if you take that hot pot and you put it down in a refrigerator, it's less of a problem, but that pot is hot. So it will make a small layer, the top layer of that surface that you're putting onto, it could make it fleishig. So you have to be aware of that. So what I tell people to do is, before you put that hot pot back into the refrigerator, put like a trip, whatever they call it, or a pot holder even, anything, until it cools off, until even the pot is cooled off. That's I think that's a good idea. Okay, glasses and glass products and things like that, maybe we'll hold off on. And again, I'll decide if we do kashering utensils next, so then we'll, or whatever point, we'll talk about do glass, the material glass, does it become milk or plastic, all that type of stuff, but we'll hold off on that for a later class. Dry if it's less of a problem, but I'm worried that not necessarily. Like, are people going to really check on the bomb? Mm-hmm. Is it, there's no residue or anything like that? It's sort of like the onion thing. There's nothing wrong with keeping that onion. It's just, I don't know if it's, I think Rabbi Walsh is 100% right. You know, it's a dangerous thing to do. So, like I mentioned in the first year, one of the things besides the concept, and what, I had to give you an appreciation what a hashgacha is. Another thing is, I'm trying to also present things. The best thing is to prevent a shaila, to prevent a problem. So if you have the concepts and you know, think a little, and not only that, but also you hear some of the problems like these onions, so then you could cut a shaila off at the pass. There's no shaila because we obviate that. Okay?
Yeah. In terms of the new sodas coming out, the ham soda?
Ham soda? You mean like it? Well, maybe when we get the car. But see, that was a big. You don't need.
They said they're committed to making a junk.
A what?
They have a junk. They already
have. Oh, Jones. Yeah, they make all those weird flows. Yeah. Well, see. Do we know if it's gonna be kosher?
They said they're committed to making a kosher.
I don't know. This is. It's nothing new because I mean, it was a big problem when Bacos came out. Bacos has hashgach on it. And a person very in the hashgacha told me, I mean, this is years ago, but I remember when I was in Kol, or maybe even before that, I asked somebody who I knew who was in that hashgacha, and I said, you know, like, I didn't accuse, you know, I said, like, isn't that kind of weird? So he said, you should know, we sat down and we deliberated for about a long time, but it's cut, you know, there's no bacon in it. It happens to be, I saw, I don't know, a few years ago, that their competitors used that against them. That there was an ad of whoever the bacon bits that has bacon in it, they show us, and then they show the Bacos bottle, which is distinctive, and they said bar competition has this much bacon, it's an empty bottle, right? They use that against them. But he said, so he said they thought long and hard about, it's kosher, but do we want to go there? So again, they're big Talmid Chacham, they decided that, well, that's kosher. So, you know, so it's going to be the same thing. I think it's the same hashgacha, I think. I'm not sure. No, it's not. It's not the same hashgacha, actually. So,
what is the
product? Bacos?
No, the other one.
Jones Sodas. If you go to Costco, well, they have, when they first came out years ago, I saw them at Costco. I thought, oh, cool, soda with a hashgacha, a real hashgacha, you know, actually on it. Except for Shasta has an OU, you know, which you could barely see. You need a microscope to see. But this had a big, so I bought it, but it's these weird, like, I don't know. Right, you won't find cola or, they bedavka make these. Yeah, they don't make anything normal.
Like the Dabar Harif with the knife. If it, is it only the first cut of the knife, or is it any time you use that knife with that same onion or any other onion, is it going to...
Anytime you use a knife, as long as it's not part of knife, which is what you should use, you know, if you're doing... Unless, you know, cooking, you know, you're making Shabbos foods. And
I'm just saying, after you make the first cut, it doesn't, like, wear out the inflation.
No. In fact, that's what's brought down that... Again, I don't want to get into double carb. It's but again, the issue is okay. Let's just leave it. Okay. Yeah.
Is there going to be at some point a discussion about fish, like the whole deal with fish at all, or is that already been discussed? Or
what fish is kosher? You mean?
No. Fish, like, for example...
Yeah, we covered that. Fish with fleishiks?
Yeah.
That's a kind of thing? We covered it last time. We covered it last time.
Does everything else have to be covered?
Well, that I didn't get into that much, but again, we did cover that, I think, last time. So, it will be on the website.
Can you cover cooking fish with fleishiks?
Yeah, you can't. Again, you can't eat it. You definitely can't cook it.
Right.
You can't cook it.
Can you cook fish with something carved, and does that carved thing stay carved, or does it become like fishy and you can put it with fleishiks?
It depends on how much fish there was. If it was less than 160, so then it...
No, I mean, in an oven, like you're serving a kli of fish, if you're cooking a kli of full fish, you know, and then you would have, say, like you're cooking a potato pogo or something.
Afterwards. Afterwards. At the same time.
Does the potato kugel become like fishier?
That's not talked about that. I don't know if we go that far because it's discussed the other way around. In other words, let's say I cook fish in the oven and then I cook fleishiks.
Okay.
So what happens? Can I do that or not? So most people say you shouldn't do it. Because believe it or not, we're more machmir, like I mentioned last time, by sakana than we are by kosher. So we touch on that last time. So you shouldn't do it. If it's more than 24 hours, the Piskei Teshuva, I think, says it's okay. But if it's...
So you need to wait 24 hours after you cook fish before you cook
Yeah.
Even if
that's what the Piskei Teshuva, that's what I believe.
But if the fish is covered?
If it's covered, then there's no zeya problem. Right.
So it's only a matter of zeya.
If it's really covered.
You cook meat first and then the fish after?
It also should be machmir, right.
So if you're cooking, making gefilte fish, you have to plan a 24-hour gap between it and...
If you're baking it or cover it.
Well, you usually uncover the last
Right, if you uncover it, so it could be a problem. if you use the oven within 24 hours, which, again, on a Friday would be the issue. Yeah?
With the fleshed onion, you cut with a knife and you have a fleshed onion, you can't cut it clean off.
No,
the horn in
that's the way we hold. That's right. Technically, yeah, but when all is said and done, that's the issue that I was talking to Rabbi Friedman today about. In other words, when you look at the halacha, then it just grows and grows and grows and grows, right? You know, like really, again, like some people say, it's only by one thing, by a cultist. You know, that's only a cultist. It's only by a certain vegetable, but anything else is it really usher? So again, there's a discussion: is an onion really a dover part? No, it's not so simple. But lemaisa, that's what we say. So, like I said, it goes even to a point where, like I said at the end of this mini topic, that it's not so simple that you had an onion that you cut with a fleishik knife. There are some opinions that say you got to wait 6 hours. Believe it or not.
But you don't really have to throw the onion out if you have a special keli.
Yeah, and you write cow on it or inflation. Right. That's what I'm saying. Rabbi Welch was just saying as far as most people don't do that.
Right.
And if they do, so then who says they'll keep it in there? And then, you know, as far, like I said, to cut off a potential shiloh before it becomes a shiloh.
But usually you keep it on a plate. You don't just put it back in the fridge.
Yeah, but a lot of times people won't notice that because, again, really, like if you put an apple on a plate, it doesn't make the apple fleshy.
No.
Right? So, Okay, so we'll pick this up in Meretz Hashem after Hanukkah.